This is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name and your title.
Kimberly Bellflower, and I'm the playwright of John Proctor is the Villain.
And it's running at Studio Theater here in DC now through June 5th. Hey, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, this is the world premiere of this, and the name, you know, John Proctor is the Villain is the title, and the name John Proctor might be familiar to folks from, you know, if they in school or theater arts, whatever, if they read The Crucible. So tell me the general premise here. You know, it's sort of, I guess what, it's set in a modern day about high schoolers reading The Crucible, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's set in a small rural town in North Georgia. And the high school English class, the junior honors lit class, is studying The Crucible in the wake of Me Too. And so as Me Too kind of starts to hit close to home for a lot of them, there are parallels. The students start drawing with The Crucible and kind of upends their understanding of how they're being taught to understand The Crucible.
Gotcha. And did you, I assume you read the Arthur Miller's Crucible back in, did you read it in high school and then you've been marinating on all these years and you decided to write about it, or what sparked it for you?
I did read it in high school and did not really think about it, did not really marinate on it much. Yeah, I read it in my junior lit class as well. And I revisited The Crucible also in the wake of Me Too, like these characters, I just wasn't assigned it. And I had read a book by Stacey Schiff, who's a feminist historian who wrote this nonfiction book about Salem. It's called The Witches, Salem 1692. And it really changed my understanding of the realities of that time period and that moment in history. I learned a lot of things about just context for the girls' lives and what they were dealing with. And then when Me Too, kind of that tidal wave hit, you know, Harvey Weinstein and all the allegations that followed, I remember one of the men who was accused called Me Too a witch hunt. And I kind of had this book on my mind and I was like, that's not what a witch hunt means. And I just couldn't stop thinking about that connection. And I revisited The Crucible just as a theater artist being like, oh, that's the most famous work of literature about the Salem witch trials and witch hunts period. I should revisit that just because my brain can't stop turning on it. Mm-hmm. And then in that rereading, I was just really struck by how different the play was than the play I remembered reading and the play I thought I understood. Yeah, especially the character John Proctor, as the title says.
Yeah, exactly. So So give me both sides of that coin, John Proctor, then. So, remind us, you know, who John Proctor is, you know, in the play. You know, he's set up as the protagonist. You know, he's Elizabeth Proctor's husband, and, you know, she gets accused of witchcraft and spared the death penalty because, you know, pregnancy, all this stuff. But I guess my question is, set up for our listeners, if they don't remember, how John Proctor is presented as sort of the protagonist in the play, and then why, and then on the flip side, why you actually think in this new lens of Me Too that he's actually the villain.
Yeah. So in the play, John Proctor is kind of the tragic hero of the play. So he is a man who he has a lot of anger. He kind of is the only person in this town who is kind of speaking up against these false allegations. He ends up being hanged because he refuses to sign a false confession to being a witch. And so The Crucible, functioning as an allegory for McCarthyism, which is the time period that Arthur Miller wrote it in, I think John Proctor is, you know, set up to kind of be the beacon for the audience to follow of like, oh, this is the person who tells the truth when everybody else is telling lies. Like he is like a moral and like character full of integrity. And in rereading it, John Proctor and Abigail Williams, who's the teenage girl who's kind of at the center of all the witchcraft allegations, they had an affair, if you can call it an affair when a grown man has a relationship with an underage girl, which you can't. And I was just really struck by how the play sets up Abigail as being this like just conniving, seductive little harlot. And John Proctor just calls her terrible names throughout the play. He is like angry at his wife for making him confess to this affair. And also he and Abigail were sleeping together when she was his employee, only a couple of months after her parents were murdered in front of her. So I was just really, really struck by the trauma that Abigail and all of the young women in the play had endured, and how their trauma just was not given any space and any gravity in the play, and that John Proctor kind of going against these false allegations was the moral thing, instead of looking at kind of what the moments of the play were before we meet him and the way that he treats the women in the play. So obviously, you know, I was reading that with the Me Too lens in mind, but it was just pretty obvious to me. And it's like, I mean, he's definitely set up to be a flawed character, but there was just a lot that like I was not taught any of those complexities. And when I've seen productions of The Crucible, I don't see any of those complexities. I see like Abigail is wicked and John Proctor is good. And so I was just really struck by how much messier and how much more gray area there was in the play with that particular lens.
Well, yeah, thank you so much for taking a lens, you know, a modern lens and looking back at the classic. And you know, it's funny how that works. You know, sometimes it seems like they might be the heroes, but if you look at it from, you know, our today's perspective, you're like, man, they're actually messed up. Right. So speak generally to that concept, not just with The Crucible, but just like, you know, with lots of, you know, mid 20th century or even hell, even later 20th century, even some 21st century stuff. Like, it's crazy how fast societies move even in like 10 years. But speak generally to that, about how, you know, it's not like we're going to throw out The Crucible, where it's still providing us, you know, this stuff to talk about, but why it's important for new works like yours to reassess them.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think my play is interrogating power structures a lot in a lot of different ways. And I think that canonical literature is this thing that like, who is allowed to be included in the canon and why, and who gets to decide that, and then who gets to teach it and pass it down. And so like then canonical literature becomes this tool of power, this instrument of power. And so I think that, yeah, generally, I mean, I think we're also, I started writing the play in 2018. And then I think, you know, in the last couple of years, starting in 2020, our country, you know, has had this racial reckoning and is questioning a lot of other systems, and kind of looking at like, oh, our founding fathers did a lot of great things, and also they owned slaves. And, right, you know, like nothing is black and white, and we can hold two truths in the same hand. And so I think that like, obviously that's our history, but then applying the same lens to literature and just kind of being like, oh, okay, this thing was taught to me in this way, but why was it taught to me in this way? Why did I just accept it without interrogating it further myself? And so I think, you know, I hope that plays like mine are able to kind of provide a kind of path into that interrogation and into kind of looking more broadly at these systems and how and why they're put in place and by whom. So I mean, that's the thing I do in a lot of my other work too. I also think that literature and kind of, you know, even if you don't know The Crucible super well, I think a lot of people, you know, kind of know the general premise. And I have plays that are in conversation with other works of canonical literature. And I think it kind of provides the audience like an on-ramp into the world in a way that's like, I don't know, kind of situates them in the same place. And even if they don't know it, like, I think that you could definitely still have a meaningful experience with the play. But it's just also a useful shorthand if you think about literature as a type of kind of mythology and shared vocabulary, which I do.
Oh yeah. And it's just fascinating what you were saying about how, you know, in Miller's time, it was like, think about it, it was this extreme, you know, it was a very progressive thing to write an allegory about McCarthyism, you know what I mean? Like, that, right. he would have been seen as, you know, a very liberal progressive thinker, and yet because they, you know, society still hadn't evolved enough, it was still like today, the gender themes and some of the things you're talking about with John Proctor being a villain is very regressive in a way. But at the time, this play was so ahead of its time. It's fascinating how that works. I guess time marches on and we look back at our former selves as Americans and thinkers and humans. And we're like, wow, we really weren't as evolved as we thought we were back then.
Exactly. Yeah.
So wait, which other of your works? I want to bring it. We can bring it back to the studio theater play in a second. But which other of your works? You said you tackled other literature and, you know, reassessing things in other plays. Which ones are you talking about?
Yeah. My play Lost Girl, which is published by Concord Theatricals. A lot of high schools do it, which is the delight of my life. It is about Wendy Darling from Peter Pan when she's like 19 or 20. And I kind of started writing it in the aftermath of my first heartbreak around that age. And it kind of looks at, I think, just her, I'm trying to think of how to word it. So it's kind of like in her struggle to move on from this formative experience with Peter in Neverland. And I think it gets at like kind of some, that kind of early adulthood depressive stage that a lot of us go through, and what it is to kind of live in the past instead of in the moment, and what it is to grow up and what that even means. And then spoiler alert, but at the end, Peter comes back and he's also grown up, and the kind of the twist is kind of like, oh, he's just a boy. So that's that play. And then I have another play called Gondol that's takes Emily Bronte. She's my favorite writer of all time. And it kind of puts her in conversation with contemporary internet horror and like Slender Man. So, you know, Gondol is the name of an imaginary world that Emily Bronte created when she was a teenager. Which is true. And so it kind of takes that tendency and our contemporary tendency to want to build mythologies and worlds. So yeah, those are kind of the main two. But I mean, I wrote fan fiction in high school. And so I think being in conversation with other things is partly just the way my writer brain understands things. And there's a lot of pop culture references in John Proctor. And I think that like that is also kind of a way that I understand things and is equally important to canonical literature in my mind. So yeah, I think that's just something that's really fun for me to play with.
Definitely. I agree entirely. And I mean, all right. So we've spoken a lot about, you know, canonical literature and reassessing classic works of the past. And, you know, I've got plenty to work with there, but before we run, I do want to double back to like the actual, you know, present day setting of John Proctor's The Villain, you know, these high schoolers. Tell me a little bit about the characters in the modern day classroom. You know what I mean? Like what are some of the things going on in their lives as they read The Crucible?
Yeah. So it kind of centers on this little tight knit friend group. And, you know, being from a small town, you kind of, the friends that you have are the friends you have forever, not like forever, but like while you're there. Like yeah. I was in the same class with people from the time I was 7 years old until I graduated high school. I'm always really interested in that, because I think that that's kind of a unique thing with small towns, where like I didn't, there was only one school to go to, so that those are the people you know. And so it kind of takes that. There's a preacher's daughter who's kind of learning to find her own voice in the aftermath of this breakup. There's like the very hyper achieving, ambitious, nerdy girl who may or may not be extremely close to who I was in high school. And then one of their best friends, there's a new girl who moved here from Atlanta, and that's a whole thing. And then one of their best friends had kind of disappeared a few months ago. She had kind of an episode where she made a lot of really impulsive bad choices, and her parents sent her to live with her aunt in Atlanta, and they're not sure if she's coming back. And then of course she does come back, and that's kind of the combustion of the play. After she comes back, kind of all the dominoes of the play start to fall. These girls have started a feminism club in this small town and are getting a lot of pushback about it. And then one of their fathers is accused of sexual misconduct. And I was really interested in kind of like, you know, it's somewhat easy to believe that like men like Harvey Weinstein have done the things that they're accused of doing, but what happens if it's someone who you felt like you knew and felt like that would be impossible? And what happens when it is like the most formative man in your life? So as kind of Me Too starts to hit in this very small town and hit very close to these characters' lives, kind of all of that kind of gets channeled into the play. And then you find out why this character Shelby has gone to Atlanta, and that has something to do with Me Too as well. And there are a couple of boys who, one of them is very well-meaning and is trying to trying to be educated by this feminist club, and the other is very, I think, afraid of the change that is happening all around him, but is reacting in very violent and emotionally bad ways to that change. So yeah, it's a big play. It's an ensemble play. So they're kind of, the characters fall all over a spectrum, but I really wanted to represent the type of people that I grew up with, and represent the contemporary South in a way that is nuanced and real to what I know. And yeah.
Great. I mean, it sounds really, really cool. And, you know, present day issues, recontextualizing things. It sounds right down a lot of our listeners' alley. I guess just in before we run, it is a play. So what do we see visually if our listeners turn out to Studio Theater? How is the set set up? Is it, you know, are we talking like, is it like a classroom setting or hallways, or does it dip back into Salem, you know, witch trial times, or how is it presented visually?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. The set is so amazing. Almost the entire play takes place in the classroom. There's one scene that doesn't, but, the set is just like, the level of detail is kind of outrageous. Just like the, you know, there is like student work that is up on a bulletin board and stuff on a chalkboard, and just like the books that are on the shelves, like everything is super, super intentional. And our set designer and props designer and all the people on the team have just put in like an enormous amount of work, making sure that that level of detail is really, really rich. And, you know, I know like a classroom kind of sounds a little sad and, you know, fluorescent lights and all of that, but obviously like our lighting designer too has made it look so beautiful and also real at the same time, which is a feat. And yeah, so it's kind of it, like a lot of plays, I think like the location is pretty, we stay in the one place the whole time and like watch the dominoes fall within the kind of the pressure cooker of that one place.
Love it. Well, it sounds fascinating. Again, everyone, it's called John Proctor is the Villain, not the hero, ladies and gentlemen, the villain. It's at Studio Theater, new play, world premiere play at Studio Theater. It's running now through June 5th. So get your tickets now at studiotheater.org. Hey, thanks for joining us. Keep up the great work. It sounds like a really, really cool play.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope you get to come see it.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks again.
Thank you.